Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. The show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. This week, my guests are actress and producer Marguerite Moreau and writer, producer and actor Hoos Miller from the narrative feature film You Can't Say No, which recently had its world premiere at the Cinequest Film Festival in Silicon Valley, California. Marguerite Moreau is known for her roles in the fantasy horror film Queen of the Damned, cult film and now Netflix series Wet Hot American Summer, Runaway Jury and the Mighty Ducks series of films, as well as appearances on the popular television series Grey's Anatomy, Smallville, Shameless and The O.C. Hoos Miller, who wrote and stars in You Can't Say No, is an actor, writer and producer who has worked with 20th Century Fox, Skywalker Ranch, Park Pictures, Gunn Films and CBS. Welcome to the show, Hoos.
Thanks for having me, Ruth.
And welcome, Marguerite.
Hi.
So, Marguerite, I wanted to ask you, both of your lives are steeped in creativity. You've been acting since you were young. I'm wondering if you can remember your first experience of art of any kind, whether it was a film, a book, a picture, a song, whatever, where you first felt how art can really affect us deeply emotionally as well as entertain us.
Well, my first memories have to do with being told stories. So my father would read us books before he went to bed. And then we had these records. And they would be like the Swiss Family Robinson, which I think I'm still looking for a copy of because I must have listened to it till it broke. Aww. And we would just lay down in the living room. Hansel and Gretel was another one, Snow White. And it was just being taken on a magical adventure that kind of like just transported me and then sent me off to reading novels as a kid. And it's still like my favorite hobby today is to read or to go see a movie.
Did you grow up in a creative environment, would you say?
Not in the traditional sense. My parents were an administrator and my mom was a nurse, and we have a lot of teachers and nurses in our family. I just kind of was the only one that went down that path.
That's interesting. And what drew you to acting then as your sort of form of artistic expression?
Oh my gosh, didn't it look fabulous? No, As a kid, though, going to the movies, I think I would probably start crying, like, into the previews. I think it was an incredibly safe place to feel my feelings and to see how people connected and made relationships. And even though most of, stories for young kids tend to be on a more simplistic level, it just really felt like a place to learn how to connect.
And you were a child actress, and it's often talked about as being a difficult transition to go from being a child actor to an adult actor, which you have done successfully. I'm wondering how it was for you.
Well, making the transition from a child actor to an adult was difficult because I think emotionally, it took a lot longer for me to look at adults not as parental figures, and be on the same level with them, like whether it be directors, producers, or even just like agents and managers, because they were always in a bit of a different position than I was as a kid. But on the other end, I think I had a really good support system in my family was always like, empty the dishwasher, you're going to college, and those grounding things in my life really helped me make the decision as much as I could as an adult continue on this path. So I felt really fortunate that it all worked out the way that it did.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that in terms of, you know, obviously as a child you are, you know, having to sort of do what people tell you kind of thing and how that might carry over. Yeah.
Realize, oh, you're an adult now as well, and you can come to the table in that way, you know, was very new, or it took a long time for me to do that, I think.
Yeah. And you did a political science degree. What sort of, you know, how did that kind of come into your career trajectory? What made you want to do that?
Oh, well, I've always loved the political process, and I was really interested in how popular culture met being a patriot. We talked about political things around the table. We were encouraged to be involved. I was encouraged to run for student government. It was always something that was part of family life in my household. Mm. And so I will always want to study that. And it was kind of like, we'll see which way I go. Going to college gave me the opportunity to really dive into that in a vigorous way. And then I realized, oh my, I don't think I can compromise like that. That seems like a really scary, and here I am in the entertainment industry, right? It seems like a really scary venue for me to survive as a sensitive one. So I decided to volunteer to work on like local voter issues in my community, and then just go make stories and help try to connect people and, you know, do all the wonderful things that movies do, but besides just entertain people, you know, give them escape and make them laugh and all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously politics in its truest sense is a reflection of what the people want to put into action. And so I would think that that's really useful for taking on different characters as well, sort of understanding at different times what has motivated the people politically.
Oh, that's definitely true. One of my most favorite things is to try to understand where other people are coming from by kind of putting myself in their shoes. And I think I can learn a lot about people both in a macro and micro sense doing this work.
Yeah. That's interesting. So, Huss, I wanted to ask you, do you remember the first time that art of any kind had a deep effect on you beyond just entertainment?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that Marguerite brings up listening to records, because that it was the same way for me. Maybe that ages us a little bit, but
it's coming back now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. I remember listening to stories on vinyl. You know, Moby Dick. The Swiss Family Robinson, like Marguerite mentioned. I mean, just I remember sitting on our living room floor listening to these records, which were so great and describing the story to sort of like audiobooks are now, but it just felt different then. That was my first memory. And then I remember I was cast in a play, I think, when I was four, and just being in that environment and watching people react to a live performance was just that was just a great thing for me to sort of get started and never wanted to let go of that feeling, I guess.
Wow, at four, that's young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you grow up in a creative environment, would you say, or did you know, how did you get in that play, for instance? Were your parents encouraging of that?
Yeah, always. My dad is a sculptor. He's an artist, and my mother has always been in education, but always very connected to the arts. My mom was a dancer. She went to Juilliard. So she's always had, just through dance or through theater or through writing, she's always had her foot in the arts, and my father as well, more on the my dad was a wood sculptor, but I've always had the arts around.
Right. Yeah. Yep. You're an actor, writer and producer. What attracted you to film particularly as your form of artistic expression?
Well, again, being little, I remember just going to the movies. I remember first movies that I ever like went to the theater in was High Noon. And I snuck out to go to that movie. And it was funny because my dad and my two older brothers were going, and both my parents didn't feel like I was old enough to go, and they were walking to the movie theater, and I snuck out and I caught up to them, and it was obviously too late for them to take me back. And but I remember just first, so they took me to the movie, and I remember watching High Noon, and that was so I just wanted to watch movies all the time. I just loved that experience. And and so from then on, I mean, you know, I've always liked that medium, I guess. I've always really enjoyed movies. when they're done well, there's nothing like it, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was, I think doing that, I've always, it's something I've always wanted to do. I think from High Noon, that was it. That did it for me.
That's interesting. And I think, you know, obviously theatre has a unique aspect of the live interaction with the audience, but it's ephemeral, whereas film, although you don't have that live interaction, it's something then that, you know, can be watched over and over and persists, you know. There's that element too, isn't there, I think that...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that was the big thing. It's sort of the lasting power of film, you know, is that, I mean, especially movies that are made on film.
Right.
You know, all you need is light, right? You just have some light. You can go down in your basement and check out. I think it's the lasting power of it, which can be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my special guest, actress and producer Marguerite Moreau, and actor, writer and producer Hoos Miller from the film You Can't Say No. We're going to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
No white horses to play the game, and I wish I knew. Something about you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe. It just goes nowhere. Well, we can do the things we want. We can do the things we like. But if we're taking all the time, well, I just don't think that it's right. Just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has been an independent bookseller for over half a century in the community we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown. We love our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz. Online and in downtown Santa Cruz.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, actress and producer, Marguerite Moreau, and actor, writer, and producer, Hoos Miller, from the film You Can't Say No. And just to let you know, if you go to the show's website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, and you go to the podcast page for this show, you'll be able to see pictures of Marguerite and Hoos, some stills from the film, get links to the film, and generally just get more information. So go to itsaquestionofbalance.com to check all that out. And we heard from Bookshop Santa Cruz in the break there, and they have a regular program of wonderful authors appearing to discuss and sign their books. And coming up on May 8th at 7 p.m, best-selling author Christopher Moore returns to the store for a reading and signing of his thrilling new book, Noir. Think Raymond Chandler meets Damon Runyon with more than a dash of Bugs Bunny and the Looney Tunes All-Stars. It's all very, very noir. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. May 8th, and you can reserve your spot in the signing line when you pre-order a copy of Noir from Bookshop Santa Cruz. And then on May 11th, White House photographer Pete Souza is appearing at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium to talk about his latest bestseller, Obama, An Intimate Portrait, which features a foreword by the president and over 300 photos, ranging from the Situation Room to candid family portraits. Tickets have to be bought in advance for that, so you can visit Bookshop Santa Cruz for more information on both the Pete Souza and the Christopher Moore events. Well, back to my special guests this week. Hoos, you and Marguerite, as I mentioned recently, worked together on the film You Can't Say No, also starring Peter Fonda, Hamish Linklater, and Julie Carmen. You wrote the film as well as starred in it. Can you give listeners an idea of what the film is about without giving too much away?
Yes, yeah, so the film You Can't Say No is about a couple on the verge of divorce, and they're sort of going their separate ways over a weekend before they come back to sign divorce papers. They go their separate ways. They run into each other in a bar, and they start talking. And while they're talking, they realize that there are things that they never knew about each other after 14 years of marriage. And so they decide to spend a weekend together playing a game. And the game is that each of them gets to pick one thing, and the whole rule is that whatever that one thing that you picked, you can't say no to it. Whatever it is, a request for, you know, to tell the truth about something, or a request to do something, or a request to do something that they never did in their own marriage. And so it's sort of a lot of things come up. It's an invigorating weekend for them, fun, refreshing, but also some of the pain that they dealt with, things come up. So a lot of things come to the surface over this one weekend.
It's an unusual story, but it's also a very real story. Where did the inspiration come from for it?
Well, really, it came from, I mean, a lot of it came from my own marriage. You know, I've been married for, I should say happily married for 15 years now. And yeah, so, you know, a lot of it came from my own marriage. By no means, this film is not an autobiography. It's not, you know, literal of my own life, but it was sparked by some problems my wife and I were having together. And a lot of it came from, you know, we have two kids, and you sort of, you know, you go through your sort of daily routine, and sometimes you forget to take care of each other in that routine. And that can, you know, as we know, I mean, the divorce rate for so many people is for so many different reasons is so high. And I think you just sort of forget to take care of each other and why you got together in the first place.
Yeah.
When there are so many external forces that are sort of, you know, that can take away from what a relationship should be about. So really, yeah, the catalyst for the story really came from my own relationship and sort of thinking about the relatability to other people going through the same thing.
Yes, yeah. The director, Paul Kramer, has said You Can't Say No isn't just a love story, it's a coming-of-age story about adults. There's a lot of films about teens coming of age. What interested you in looking at this from an adult perspective? I mean, obviously, you've spoken about your own marriage, but, you know, it's sort of, I just wondered beyond that, you know, as a larger kind of topic area.
Yeah, I think, being in my early 40s myself, I think, and I still don't know what I want to do with my life, it's just, kind of figuring out who you are. And I think you go through, you know, a bunch of different stages in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s. So I didn't see this as like a midlife crisis for either of the two characters, but more just sort of, thinking about parents who have kids in their early 40s who are, you know, trying to make their way in the world, trying to figure out their own lives while raising children. And really it's kind of a story about taking care of yourself, your relationship, right?
Sort of
finding that again.
Yeah.
So I think that's, it's very true. It was a coming of age story about these two.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point that you make, you know, that a lot of, you know, there's quite a lot of films about midlife crisis, you know, this kind of sort of pivot point. And obviously these characters are at a sort of pivot point, you know, they are getting divorced, but it also does have this context of growth and development and also not, I like the fact that they're not just walking away, you know, I mean, they are, but, you know, the way the film progresses, they mm-hmm. take this second look, and there's so much enrichment that comes from that. You feel like, you know, whatever way it went or goes, you know, I don't want to give anything away about the film, but that enrichment process of how they see each other again as human beings again is really worthwhile.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. It was obviously a very important part of the story is that obviously these two, they've spent 14 years of their life together. They have two kids. Really figuring out what each one means to each other. Because obviously they have kids together. If, you know, if they move on and get divorced, they're going to have to be in contact with each other all the time.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That was an important part of the story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the film is poignant and it deals with difficult emotional issues, but there's lots of humorous elements. What part do you feel humor plays in telling a story like this one?
Well, I think part of it is really, like I said, I mean, just in a relationship or when you have all these responsibilities and all these sort of external things or, you can take things very seriously all the time.
Right.
And I think part of it is, you know, going through life and looking at some of the stuff. It's just the humor in looking at life in a way where, you know, it is pretty funny what we do and how we react to things. And I think, you know, if you can be a little more lighthearted about how you deal with your relationship, I think the communication can open itself up too. So, but also too, I mean, you know, in making a movie like this, it could have been a really depressing film, right? About divorce.
Yes. Yeah.
and we wanted to make sure that it was funny, but also not just laugh out loud, ha ha, funny.
Right.
But awkward. Awkward. As
yes.
Well.
Yeah. There are some very awkward, amusing scenes. That's for sure.
Yes, there are. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate to have seen the film and I really, really enjoyed it. It's
thank you so much.
Lots of different layers to it. So I just wanted to also ask you as a writer, what your process is. How do you first form the idea and go about writing the actual screenplay, you know, on a practical level?
Yeah. So with any idea that I have, I always have a trusted group of friends that I'll send an idea out to and I'll see what kind of reaction I get. It can be as basic as just saying, hey, I got this idea about this one thing. And here's sort of my take on it. What do you guys think? And if I get a good reaction from the people I trust, then that's usually when I'll start formulating the story. And I have the same process as I'm formulating. I'll send it out to these same people. and get reactions on, you know, from what direction I'm heading in, or if they think it's the right direction or not. Or a lot of the time you get really good story ideas from people as well, you know, like, hey, have you read this article, or have you seen this thing, or whatever. So it's a great way to get information, but also people's opinions right off the bat.
Right.
And then as I'm actually writing the screenplay, I do the same thing. You know, I'll sometimes send people 10 pages at a time just to see what they think. And I did that with Paul, the director, as I was writing this story. You know, not only my wife was helping me write this particular movie, as you know, so I was giving her pages at a time, and I was also giving Paul 10 pages at a time and getting that feedback. So that's really helpful, I think, to have people that you really trust. I think is very important when you're writing a story, as well, at least it is for me.
Yeah, interesting. So Marguerite, obviously, who wrote the film, so he's very invested in getting it made and being in it. But what attracted you to this project, this story, as an actor?
I really like the story because it's about a woman who happens to have kids, but her life is not defined by her children. It's a story about a woman assessing a relationship and kind of, when you say, coming of age, looking at what it means to be in a relationship after kids have gotten to a certain age, and is the relationship the thing that's been sort of left in the dust? And so they're trying to, as many of us do, as we get older, kind of reconnect with the core part of ourselves that may have gotten lost as our attention turned towards family, or turned towards another person, or turned towards work. And we sacrifice ourselves in all of that, and oftentimes our partner. And so it's about how, you know, I think through humor, so nice in the film, what it accomplishes is this opportunity to show how hard it is to laugh sometimes at things that aren't so serious just because of the situation you've got into. So we sort of like tried to poke fun at that and kind of help them kind of get their giggle back in a way, just to help tell a more serious story of like self recognition.
And this whole idea of you can't say no, I'm sure will be thought provoking to an audience, you know, kind of what you would ask. It probably says a lot about the individuals and their marriage by what they would choose. I think there's three questions.
I mean, sure, and you can't say no as a concept, as a challenge, is like a great freedom, right? I don't have to think whether or not I'm going to do it. I'm going to look at this person and go, should I do it? I'm just jumping in. Already at the get-go, that's off the table. And so that can remove a lot of like environment, which baggage can come to the forefront to make you resist doing things, you know?
And I mean, your character goes through a lot of different intimate situations, and I really resonated with you in the part. I mean, there's one particular scene which I don't want to give away to people who haven't seen the film, but that's very funny with you and Huss Miller and Hamish Linklater. And I'm just wondering how you approach, you know, the different kinds of intimacy that are needed by a character like this.
I think you really look at what her needs are and how big they are. And in the movie, one of the most wonderful things is the situations like the one you're talking about really show how desperate she is to make a decision to reconnect or to not lose. The situation we're dealing with in the movie is about trust and like, can you trust your partner again when they make mistakes, which I think we all face in varying degrees with the people that we love. And she's desperately trying to see if she can give of herself again. And so the extreme situation she gets herself in only represent like how much she wants to, even if she's afraid.
Yes. Yeah. The scenes between you and Huss are very real. I think I was completely drawn in. Your performance was compelling, and you and Huss really create something very special together. And I think it's always intriguing to the public how actors create something so real. What's it like to work so closely with a group of people and then return to your normal life when it's over?
Well, I've been doing it now for like 30 years, so I'm better at it now than I was. I think on my first movie, saying goodbye to everyone, all the adults were saying, you know, it was really nice knowing you. And I'm like, no, we'll see each other again. And you could see in their eyes, they understood something that I didn't.
Right.
I think when we come together in a project like this, a lot of us are very much attracted by the material and who's created an environment up in Santa Rosa for us all to get a really easy back and forth going quite quickly. And we were able to kind of create a backstory for the characters and being together both in our off time and our on time, kind of isolated with our families while making the film, kind of created very quickly a very relaxed and, known physicality with each other.
Mm.
Which really helped, as well as sharing music back and forth and, being introduced to all the things that influenced the story really helped create like a long-term history that I think plays out quite nicely in the film between the two characters.
Yes. Yeah. And what about, I mean, this may be something that doesn't really affect actors, but I think people outside the industry always wonder is like how real is what you're doing in the film, and do you lose a sense of reality, like your life outside the film? Is there any kind of conflict like that, or is it just very obvious, once you are a professional actor that, you're acting and then you're not acting?
Oh, you mean interpersonally?
Yes. Well, just, again, I'm not even just talking necessarily in love situations. I mean, I think obviously, the general public's always intrigued by those, but it doesn't even have to be that. But it's just if you're having a very deep, intimate experience that seems so real to people watching the film. I mean, when you're creating it, do you ever lose yourself in that and sort of forget your other life, or is it just very clear?
Well, being up in Santa Rosa, I have to say, we brought my very new son and my husband came up, and we were living up where they shot kind of all the stuff for Hamish's character.
Mm.
And it was very hard to return to normal life. You have such a beautiful, beautiful, for people, when you see the film, it is just stunning where we got to shoot and where subsequently I got to live, walked around their boats and, walked over to the bar and then walked over to the jacuzzi and then got to make a movie. It was like a dream scenario. But truthfully, in terms of like creating intimacy, sure, it can get confusing. I'm sure for every project is different. But also, too, we were shooting so fast and we were also, in awkward positions, losing light. It was very technical a lot of times. And then the moments when we could create like different scenes, like the tree nut scene, we were lucky to just be up there all day. But who's like producing the whole time? Running off to here, running off to there, and then jumping into the scene. And that was like the one scene where he couldn't get up and down the whole time. And from an acting point of view, it was most fun because usually the actors all hang together and we're like a little gang. And then, they call us to set and then we go do our thing. And I think that scene really shows that. And it's really nice. And also the shaving cream scene.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. That also, we were just stuck in that room. And that time, it's less of like flirty intimacy and more just like getting better and better at finding what the truthful nuggets are in the scene for the audience is really fun to do.
Yes. Yeah. Sounds like it. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guests, actress and producer Marguerite Moreau and actor, writer and producer Hoos Miller from the film You Can't Say No. And just to remind you again, if you're interested in finding out more about the film, you can go to the show website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, and you can check out photographs there. I'll put up links as well as the audio. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere. indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guests this week, actress and producer Marguerite Moreau, who by the wonders of technology is speaking to us on the phone from Canada. And I'm also speaking to actor, writer and producer Hoos Miller, who I believe is in Los Angeles, from the film You Can't Say No. So it's amazing how we're all connected together here. You Can't Say No has a wonderful ensemble cast who's getting the right people to work together can make or break a film. How did you go about getting this group of people together?
Well, I mean, I have to give all credit to our casting director, Julia Kim. She pieced everyone together and really just, I mean, found us an amazing cast, you know, all the way from Peter Fonda to Hamish to Julie to Ingrid, to Annie Monroe. I mean, just everybody in it was, you know, really, everyone was so great. Yeah. And so, yeah, I have to give our casting director credit.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a unique cast of characters, some really great character, you know, portraits. I mean, Peter Fonda's character is really interesting, and then Hamish Linklater, his character is very off the wall, shall we say.
Yeah.
They do a wonderful job. I wanted to ask you, Marguerite, Hollywood can be a very challenging environment, that the film industry generally, but maybe specifically Hollywood, wherever you are on the success trajectory, particularly as an actor, I think. I'm wondering, particularly as you've been in the business so long, how you keep a sense of yourself and what you really want from your own life?
Besides exercise. you know, keeping a perspective is remember why you do things. Like when you get quiet and it's not little Marguerite being like, oh, I want to be in that show. Oh, what is that person doing? You know, the compares that can happen when... You know, there's a lot of people who do what you do and they do it very well. And there's not a lot of logic as to why people get certain roles.
Yeah.
You really, I find for me and my personality is to reconnect to why I do my little thing every day and look for opportunities in the work I do to explore that. And for my own personal growth, that's number one, to grow as a person into a more human being. And I really love the art of acting for that. Like I said before, how you can think about other people and other perspectives in a way that's safe. you know, I read the news sometimes and I get so hot under my skin being like, how can someone do that? Or why is the world this way?
Yeah.
I think acting really gives me a good perspective and gives me a way to work on the complicated feelings I have inside and sort of like learn how to navigate not only my own emotions, but try to be more compassionate about other people and the limits that they have. So that's like my, on a macro kind of like, or is that micro? I don't know. I've used those terms many times this hour and I don't know why, but I would say that keeping my cool is definitely in thinking about, you know, we're all just people spinning on a planet in the middle of nowhere. And this is what we're doing with our time while we're here. So enjoy yourself and do your own little bit of gardening or whatever you're doing over in the corner to like, kind of, I don't know, move the human race along.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just the kind of perspective I'm talking about that I think is hard to keep. You know, if you're more well known, then you've got, you know, that sort of adulation, if you like, or recognition, and perhaps start believing your own PR. And then if you're not as well known, then you've sort of always, or there can be a tendency to feel like you're outside looking in, and all of it, I think, can really, which either way, it can mess with your head if you don't consciously do something to let it not, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, and wonder if that can happen at any level along the food chain, so to speak. You know, if you've you're trying to break in, you've done some work, you've done a series, you've done a bunch of movies, you know, it can keep going. It's like, I think that mentality can really feed on itself. And when is it ever enough? Or you have to protect the notoriety that you have. And it's interesting, you know, they never teach. And I was listening to your interview with the director of the movie about the female cricket player.
Oh, yes.
And you asked them, you said, would it be beneficial to have some sort of like business classes? Because certainly as a creative, I am not so inclined to be thinking about my work on that end. I try and work on that a bit, but I'm a bit lost. It would be so killer to have a little bit more sort of structure to that part of my life. And I think it would give more balance to this kind of like, you know, the mind. I don't want to.
No, I know what you want to say.
You know what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I do.
It can happen to a creative when you compare yourself, or, you know, everybody wants to be doing the thing that there's not as many spots for, you know, instead of, you know, variety of things in the industry.
Yeah, and particularly in industry where increased visibility can help you get more work, it makes that a goal in and of itself, doesn't it? You know, to be visible rather than to do good work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's a lot of extremely successful people on all the whole spectrum of the talent scale.
Yes. Yeah. I always remember reading a quote from John Lennon when he, you know, left the Beatles, and he said something like, oh, you know, I just was so depressed. I was thinking, is all I will ever be is a Beatle. And you're like, oh my God, if you could do that to yourself when you had that level of not just fame, but artistic success, you know, of real creative work that's so solid. And yet he could still do that to himself. It just shows you it's not about what is on the outside. It really is about your internal life. I think
couldn't have said it better.
What about you, Hoos? How do you kind of approach this, you know, difficult area of the opportunity often being out of your hands, isn't it, as whether to get work unless you take the reins a bit and create your own projects?
Yeah, well, that was that's been my focus, is just creating my own projects. You know, I have the opportunity to do that, and that's, you know, and I don't live in Los Angeles, which was something that, you know, my wife and I decided that we wanted to move out of LA. So it's really, you know, my focus over the last, I would say, you know, 8 to 10 years has really been focusing on my own projects and not worrying about what Hollywood thinks or what, you know, it was just making films, making short films, and no one sees, you know, obviously you want to get your work out there and you want people to eventually see what you're doing. But yeah. But yeah, for me, it was really, you know, the focus was doing my own thing, which there's a nice freedom in that for me, was not worrying about those other things, about, you know, getting the job or competing with other people or doing, which I think, you know, I really admire people who do that. But that wasn't my focus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Marguerite made a good point also that maybe in particularly in acting training, it might be good to have some kind of instruction about how to approach these sort of more emotional interface elements of having it as a career, you know, because it is something you're trying to do from an art perspective, but also you want to make a living from it, ideally, you know, so that you can be working at something you love.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the this industry, you know, I mean, it's been said many times, but you absolutely need to have a thick skin. I think people, a lot of people getting into the industry could certainly benefit from a course in just learning how to navigate
developing a thick skin.
Developing a thick skin, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm very interested in a psychologist called Alice Miller, and she studied artists of different kinds, and she felt that art can really help people consider and process difficult issues, even traumas. And I'm just wondering, Marguerite, what you think, whether both from the point of view of people making art and also those experiencing it, whether art can have any kind of healing effect.
I'm just thinking my answer through, because I was thinking about how, let me just keep thinking about it. Hold on one second.
Okay. Well, Hoost, do you want to...
I'm thinking...
Oh, you're...
Yeah,
okay.
Go for Hoost.
Hoost, yeah. Do you want to chip in? And do you have any feelings about that, about how art can maybe help us process what been making it and, you know, experiencing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a proven thing for, you know, it's very therapeutic for people to paint or to write poetry or to write short stories or just to write in your journal, right? I think I think that's been a proven scientific way of dealing with pain or you know, or trauma or or, you know, even physical pain. I think it's a way for people to deal with that. So
has it been like that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've written a ton of things that haven't gone anywhere. And it can be very therapeutic to just get things on paper. You know, it's very helpful. So yeah, absolutely. It helps you work through things. And like I said, I mean, with my process, I involve a lot of people in my process. And so you can really learn a lot about where other people are coming from or how other people feel about a certain subject or you know, whether it's political or, you know, social or whatever it is that I think it helps you learn and helps you deal with things better.
Yeah.
That's my take anyways.
Yeah. Have you had any thoughts, Marguerite?
Well, I was thinking about how art can reveal, maybe things that are hidden or hard to see that are in plain view. So I was thinking about over the last award season, I, Tonya, got a lot of attention. And I think one of the most powerful things that I saw last year was that movie, because I went into it with a very real experience of what happened during the Olympics with Tonya Harding. Mm. And then I saw a movie that was from a different point of view, and I think fundamentally changed the narrative about what we collectively thought we experienced. I think it's very hard in this day and age to grasp concepts like the media is doing this, or especially when it has to do with, in America right now, that the media is negative. Half the country thinks that they're false and the other half are defending them passionately. Mm. But with this specific incident way back then, it was they're selling newspapers, and we are getting a story based on how juicy it looks.
Mm.
And I love the power that that movie had to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe you didn't get the whole story, or you weren't looking at the whole story. And I think that that can, I mean, I think that's probably super helpful for Tonya Harding, or even the OJ story that came out last year, Ryan Murphy's awesome story. And then I thought a lot about Marcia Clark and like what she went through. And I remember being in Los Angeles and driving by the courthouse every day, and the news media were on scaffolding all the way up the building. It
wow.
was tremendous.
Yeah.
And so to think about with a little bit of distance, and of course, you know, dramatic license is taken, but to get to re-examine our social environment through a personal viewing of a film, I think is awesome. Also, Dunkirk was incredible to watch last year from that perspective. So I do think very much so, both on a personal level and on a societal level, art has a great ability to inform and change and heal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, sort of gaining empathy through art is something I consider a lot. But listening to you talk, I was also struck by what you were saying, that it also takes perhaps more intellectual concepts and makes them more visceral, you know, rather than just understanding, well, you know, on an intellectual level, well, that this is like this. But when you see something, when you feel it more, it kind of drops down to a different level of understanding.
Yes, well said.
Yeah. So we're coming towards the end of the show now. What are your hopes for the film going forward, Hoos?
Well, I mean, I hope that it gets out to as wide an audience as possible, which, you know, we're working on that right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to put, as I mentioned earlier, link to the film website on the show website. It's aquestionofbalance.com, so people will be able to follow the film there, you know, through film festivals and through its release. Did you want people, do you have a Facebook page, or is it mainly your website where you would like people to go?
Yeah, you can go to our website, youcan'tsaynofilm.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is just You Can't Say No, to keep up with upcoming news.
Great. Well, I really, really enjoyed the film on so many levels. I think it was a really very interesting subject, but also every person in it just plays their character perfectly. And I think the chemistry between you and Marguerite, and I don't mean that necessarily in a sort of sexual sense, but the chemistry in terms of you actually creating a very real feeling relationship that had so many different levels, it just, congratulations to you both. It really, really draws you in as an audience member.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ruth. Yeah. Appreciate that.
And thank you very much for your time from the various places that you're currently in, and I'm sure you're super busy, so it was great to have you on the show. Thank you, Hoos.
Thanks, Ruth. Appreciate and it.
Thanks very much, Marguerite.
Thank you so much.
Just to remind you again that you can go to the show website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You'll be able to find the podcast of this show. If you've enjoyed it, tell other people about it. But you'll also be able to see lots of photos from the film and of Marguerite and Hoos, and also get the information of how you can follow the progress if You Can't Say No. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon.